Sticks and hits and goals and saves and slap shots and goons. We've got sportly commentary to an NFL commute. But we also cover movies, TV shows, hits and tunes. It's your weekly bowl of hockey and nonsense. Part two.
I'm Ryan Lambert from Elite Prospects.
I am Sean McAdoo from The Athletic.
And Sean, it's that time of year. Do you know what time of year it is?
What time of year is it?
It's the time of year where a 26-year-old who's on his seventh NHL organization has one good game against the Lehigh Valley Phantoms or whatever.
Yeah.
And everybody in the local media is like, he's going to challenge for a third line spot.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. It's congratulations to your favorite team. It's just incredible organizational depth. I mean, they have got...
They found a real diamond in the rough.
They've got like 70 guys who could all definitely play in the NHL. And mm-hmm. Really too many guys. And I think what you need to do is package like six or seven of those and trade for like one superstar.
That's right. We'll give you A.J. Greer, one of the Cates brothers. All these guys I've definitely fucking heard of.
Yeah. I got to be honest, I find it even weirder when it's like you get this analysis of like some guy you've never heard of not playing well. It's like, right. Yeah, he's weak on the puck. And it's like, yeah, I wouldn't expect
that
him
sounds
to be
like
good.
You're describing an AHL player.
Yeah, that's like, that sounds about right. You could have just typed in his name. And when I didn't recognize it, I'd be pretty sure how this was going to go.
The kid from Seattle who got suspended the other day. Did you see this?
I did. I saw the hit. Yeah.
Well, like everybody, you know, I saw the hit. It's a bad hit. He should have got suspended for it. But it was just like, look, I know a lot about hockey guys and like young hockey guys and all that kind of stuff, like prospects. Never heard of this fucking guy in my life. And I was like, boy, if this is what we're starting out the season with, I don't know. Couldn't tell you his name off the top of my head.
I couldn't.
Last night.
I couldn't either. And I feel, you know, in a way, I feel bad for him. Yeah, actually, I do feel bad for him because it was a bad hit. But it's like you were going to get one game, probably. Yep. You've got to do something to make an impact. You probably see someone, you're like, this is my chance. And you hit him and you're like, I screwed up. I blew that one. So,
yeah.
Yeah, that's it for him. I also find it very, very funny this time of year where we get like training camp opens, your team plays one game, 2 days later they cut like 40 guys.
That's like, right.
Oh yeah, okay, good. Yeah, we saw enough. We didn't like what we saw in that one practice, and now everybody's gone.
Yeah, John Tortorella the other day was talking about Wade Allison, a guy I bet you haven't heard of, Sean. He was a big college hockey player for a while there.
Take your word for it.
A classic thing where he couldn't stay healthy, but he when he was healthy, he was scoring two goals a game. You know what I mean? Like, just this is a guy who scores a ton and... just can't stay in the lineup. That was true in college. That was true in the AHL. You know, he's had a couple of cups of coffee in the NHL, right? And there, in the Flyers' first preseason game, there's a big hit. He comes in as like the third guy or whatever and starts throwing bombs. And the refs ding him for instigator. So it's 2-5-10, right? And John Tortorella after the game is like, hey, it's really not fair to give that guy an instigator and get him out of the game for 17 minutes. That might be his only preseason game, you know? And it's like, I guess that's true. But also, like, should a guy who's played like 100 games over the last five seasons be trying to like feel like he needs to fight in the first preseason game?
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
you know, and, like this and, is a guy who gets hurt constantly.
It's like, you know, John, you do have the ability, if you want to change that. Like, you're
well,
kind
I think
of in charge.
His take on that kind of was like, if you have to go sit in the penalty box for 17 minutes, your ability to, like, even if you step back on the ice and you play the rest of your regular shifts, you're not as in the game as you were because you just sat there and your muscles all tensed up or whatever, you know. That I think that was kind of his point, but yeah, I don't know. That to me, I thought it was insane because I was like, this guy's whole thing is he gets hurt all the time. You're gonna be like, I'm glad he fought. That was cool. No, John. Like, this is the one guy on your team who maybe shouldn't. Okay. Anyway, I guess we got to talk now about Survivor because we forgot to talk about it until late in the show last week, and then the episode happened, right?
Yep.
And here's a fun fact for you, Sean. I have a rooting interest in this one.
Yeah. Now I saw you mention something about this.
One of the competitors went to my college.
Okay.
And she's the girl with the one leg.
Okay.
She, you know, like, I really only know this because she was in a bad ATV accident, I believe it was, and lost her leg while she was in college. And so, you know, a lot of news stories about this in the local paper, you know? And, yeah, now she's on Survivor. Nobody told me this. So I watched the show and I'm like, why does that girl look familiar? And then they showed, that she had one leg and I was like, that's exactly why that girl looks familiar.
That's so cool.
We're Team Noelle on this season of Survivor.
Okay.
And I'm not sure. Like, I'm still kind of getting my feet under me. I don't know if you have a take on this, but, like, I feel like she's going to stick around for a while because they gave her a lot of time in the first episode.
Yeah, usually if you get a lot of time in the first episode, that implies that you're going to stick around, but maybe not until the end.
Yeah.
They tend to kind of do the slow build for the eventual winners. Although the last couple of years or last couple seasons, they did mix that up a little bit. Did you finish both of the last two seasons?
Yeah.
Okay. Mm-hmm. And she's also the sort where one of the ways that the game has kind of evolved over the years is everyone is now very hyper aware of, like, who's got the best pitch to the jury. If people don't watch Survivor, you vote each other off, but then when you get to the end and it's down to three, then the people who got voted off get to pick. And anyone who's got a sympathetic story, like, for example, I lost my leg.
I was a Division I athlete who lost her leg. Yeah.
It ends up being perceived as a threat. So I wouldn't think that she's likely to win, but could definitely stick around for a while.
If she doesn't, I'm gonna seek out Jeff Probst, and I'm gonna be like, "This is bullshit, my friend."
I'm kind of bummed out that they don't have. There's not a Canadian this year. There's not a young Canadian woman like there was in the last two seasons. But I guess, you know what? Got to even the playing field.
that's right.
The Canadian women were dominating to such an extent that it was like, U.S. Women's national hockey team is probably like, hey, we didn't think of that. What if we just didn't invite the Canadian women?
Perfect.
Yeah, just do it without them. And maybe
that's right.
Maybe we can win. I enjoyed the first episode. I will tell you that a weird thing about me is I have watched every season of Survivor. Mm-hmm. I have watched close to every episode of Survivor. I remember like six things that have happened in the history of the show. Like, I enjoy everything. I've never once sat down and been like, I regret watching this. I've never thought about not watching. And yet nothing sticks with me. So I will not remember anything that happened until the end. And really, I don't remember any players unless they came back. Anyone who's just like, we watch as a family, like, we watch Survivor, but we'll also watch, like, on YouTube. There's lots of places to do, like, breakdowns and,
mm-hmm.
you know, all that sort of thing. And they are constantly mentioning players just by name. They're like, hey, this person's got like a Joe Smith vibe. And I'm like, I have no idea who that is.
Right.
And like, my kids have only seen a few seasons. So they're like, Dad, who was it? I'm like, I have no idea.
Couldn't tell you.
I have no idea. The guy just said that they won. Yeah, I watched that whole season. I watched them win. I have no memory of it at all.
My girlfriend watches The Bachelor, and if a season seems like it's going to be good, I will also watch it. The last couple have been duds as far as I was concerned, so I kind of bailed early. But it's the same thing on that show where it's like, oh, you remember Steve B from, you know, the Katie season or whatever? And I'm like, don't remember the Katie season. What are you talking about? You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Now, granted, I am coming to it much later, so like that definitely helps or hurts rather my my ability to know the guys, you know, or gals, you know. But I definitely feel like you're supposed to know every single person who has been on the show. Oh yeah, this guy was eliminated in week 2 5 years ago, and you're like, yeah, of course, that's Tyler Q. Mm-hmm. Everybody knows that guy.
Yeah.
Oh, all right.
It's very. It would be like if I was like a Leaf fan at the level I'm at, and yet you were like, you know, hey.
How do you feel about Matt Sundin?
Yeah. And I was like, what? Which one was he again? Remember Darcy Tucker? No recollection of that whatsoever.
I will say this, speaking of The Bachelor vis-a-vis Survivor. The Bachelor, Survivor, and Top Chef are the only three reality TV shows I watch. Jeff Probst seems like he's right in the middle between like Padma and Tom, where they really want these people to all do well. Mm-hmm. And the guy who used to host The Bachelor before he got kicked off the show, who seemed like a real dirtbag to me. Mm-hmm. Like he seemed very phony to me. Jeff Probst is right in the middle where he's like, I'm, you know, challenging you to the most fiendish games I can imagine. But also, you know, if you fall down and hurt your shoulder, you got to, I'm going to sit down and be like, I feel really bad about this.
Jeff is
gotta
like,
leave this show.
Jeff is like super into it and mostly sincere, but it's every now and then he will decide that he doesn't like a contestant. And that is very amusing. And this hasn't happened in a while, but if anybody quits or considers quitting, like the contempt that he has for those people is
okay. I did very see fun. That one. Like I said last week, and this will be the end of Survivor talk. Sorry, everyone. Like I said last week, I went back and was just like, "What's the best season of Survivor? Let me watch that and then see where I'm at with it." And it was like season 16, and a woman quit halfway through because she's like, "I miss my kids."
Yeah.
And everybody's like, yeah, sure. But he did seem to be like, I mean, it's your decision, but...
There was one famous one, and I think it may have been the first person, because there have been people who quit because they were injured or like,
yeah,
in a couple of cases they got bad news from home or something. But there was just like, I can't remember if it was one or maybe even two players who were just like, we're not having fun. This is hard. I want to go home and be warm and not starving and all that stuff. And Jeff, like, he was so disgusted. And then when it came, like they announced this at the tribal council, and then like famously Jeff, like wouldn't even put their torches out. Like,
right.
That's the symbolic way that you exit. He was like, no, just go. I'm not doing that. You haven't earned the right.
Chuck their torch in the water.
Yeah. Like he was just like, just leave it behind. Like just dripping with contempt. It was very, very funny.
Oh, yeah. See, I haven't encountered that yet, but maybe that'll happen this season. You never know. All right. Back to the NHL. The thing I have written down here is injuries are piling up already.
Mm-hmm.
Let's start out west. The Vancouver Canucks are already going to be without Brock Besser and Ilya Mikheyev for weeks. Now, weeks does get you into the regular season, but maybe not much more than like 3 or 4 games.
Yeah, we're at that stage where when you hear like out for 2 or 3 weeks, that could be 2 games that matter.
Right. I'm kind of the opinion that like this is not the time you want a guy missing 2 weeks, though. I don't like, I have no like evidence to back this up, but I feel like you kind of start behind the 8 ball if you miss 2 weeks of training camp or whatever. Versus if you miss 2 weeks in February, like you miss more games for sure, mm-hmm. obviously. But if you miss, you know, two games plus like 3 exhibition games and a bunch of practices and stuff like that, that is more damaging to like being in the flow of things. Mm-hmm. than if you like get hurt in December. I don't know.
That's interesting. I wonder if that would hold, like if we look back at guys who got hurt and missed significant chunks of training camp and how many of them went on to have tough seasons. I don't know. I mean, I think you look at Vancouver, I think you could certainly imagine that it would hurt a guy like Mikheyev who's going to a new team more than Brock Besser, who, I mean, in theory, knows the systems and the setup a little bit better. But, you know, it's also not like you're an NFL guy going over and you're having to learn a brand new offense or something like, you know, that. What do we? Oh, we clog up the neutral zone and forecheck hard. Got it. Okay.
Yeah. Well, it was funny about Besser because at Canucks Media Day or whatever, he was like, "This is the year I'm scoring 30 goals." Immediately injured.
Yeah,
that sucks for him, man.
I was that just is like rough
Jesus. Like you say, it's probably not that impactful. Maybe it is for Mikheyev more than Besser, but like. Are you asking Mikheyev to really reach into his bag of tricks and pull out something brand new here? Like that kind of player? Probably not, right?
Yeah.
He
was hurt a little bit in Toronto, but it's not like this is a guy who that's the other thing that you're concerned about. If it's an older guy or somebody with a history of injuries and you're like, ah, here we go again. But that's not this guy.
All right. What do you think about this John Tavares news? Also out weeks.
Yeah. So again, concerning in the sense that it's a similar injury to one he had a few years ago and he missed a month. But missing a month means 2 weeks here of the season. I don't think it ultimately matters a ton. And maybe even with some of the older players, you know, a little less wear and tear early in the season maybe helps. It's just a question of, you know, does he get back? It's two things. Does he get back fully healthy? You know, does it linger? That kind of thing you're always concerned about, especially with an older guy and this sort of injury. And then the other thing is we all expect the Leafs are going to be good enough that they can go without their second line center for a few games. But the nature of Toronto and especially how it is, like if they get off to a bad start, the panic does set in and you know, there won't be that benefit of the doubt that, you know, if Tampa is 4-7, like people will be wondering what's up, but nobody's going to be like, wow, Tampa's screwed. Whereas if it's happening to the Leafs, who knows? So, you know, you would love to get off to a quick start if you're the Leafs, but also if the Leafs get off to a quick start, nobody cares. So right. As long as he gets back and healthy, I don't think it's a high level problem.
I have been losing my mind the last little while, speaking of the Leafs. Of Austin Matthews has 2 years left on his contract, and everybody in the Toronto media and like, you know, Sportsnet people are all like, we got to really start thinking about this Nathan MacKinnon contract and what it means for the Toronto. Like, fucking relax. Jesus Christ.
Yeah. Yeah. It's a preview of next year.
Psychotic.
It's a preview of next year because this is, you know, he can't sign an extension now. You can't do that until there's only 1 year left of your deal, which is next July for him. He can discuss one, but there's no point. I mean, until you've got this season under you, he could be back-to-back MVP. He could be a guy who took a big step back. There's no way to know. It is a story though, because when they gave him that extension, everybody focused on the $11 million, but the fact that they only gave him 5 years, which meant he walked right up to free agency.
Yeah.
I'm with you. Like there's nowhere for I think it's a story, but there's nowhere for the story to go, right now. So, I mean, we got to pace ourselves a little bit, but next summer, all bets are off. Next summer, it's going to be, a major story because, you know, if he wants to stick around, they'll pay him.
Yeah, sure. But that's my point. Why are we talking about this now?
Yeah.
Why don't we talk about this in 10 months? How's that?
I don't know if you know this, Ryan, but one time Mitch Marner got a haircut and it was the lead story on TSN for 3 months, even though a Canadian team, I don't know, this is
like
fake stuff that never happened, but this is welcome to Canada. You can now complain that lead stories are getting too much.
I understand, but like this is psychotic even for them. Like, these people should be in jail for this shit. Like, this is this is truly insane. Like, you know, look, as you say, this is Canadian media. Like, this is especially, like, when it comes to the Leafs, that nobody has a normal fucking reaction to anything that ever happens, right?
Correct.
And, like, how long have I been on Twitter following all these fucking Canadian people? I've seen, oh, did you see this Paul Henderson goal? It was 50 years ago. Paul Henderson. We're going to talk about Paul Henderson all fucking day. I get that that comes with the territory, right?
Mm-hmm.
Much like, I, you know, Canadians are always saying about, like, oh, you Americans need to get over the Miracle on Ice. I'm sitting here going, I fucking agree with you. It was 40 years ago. Who cares?
Mm-hmm.
Now this one comes along and they're like, well, ours is different, though. Because it was 50 years ago.
Yeah. 50-year anniversary today, yeah. I think.
No, according to all the tweets I saw the second I woke up this morning.
Okay.
did you know about this? Yeah, okay. Relax, please. It was, like I said, I think it's even more pathetic to care about this because it was even longer ago and it involved NHL players. Oh, wow. And NHL players beat the Soviet national team. Crazy. Wow. Yeah. You got, like, Bobby Orr out there? He beat him? That's nuts.
Well, they famously did not have Bobby Orr for that series.
Well, but like all those other fucking guys.
But, well, that's it. But I mean, that's why it's better than the Miracle on Ice, because it was actually two good teams and not just like.
No, but that's my point.
But much less of a upset. It wasn't an upset. But
no, that's what I'm saying. But every Canadian's like, we did it. And it's like, yeah, you should have done it.
Well, because like, very famously, this is even before my time, which is saying something. But very famously, when this series was set up, everyone in Canada thought it was going to be a sweep. They thought they were going to absolutely destroy the Russians, absolutely, you know, proclaim once and for all, prove their superiority. Then the Soviets come over to Canada to play the first four games here. The Soviets win 3 out of 4.
Yeah.
And then everyone's panicking. And game 5 ends in a tie, and everyone's saying, oh my goodness, we're going to lose this thing. And then the comeback comes. So it's sort of like a reverse underdog type deal. That's why it resonates so much, because we thought we were vastly superior. We found out we weren't, but we still pulled it out in the end. That's the way the thinking goes. And also, you know, with the additional fun part where we all hated the Soviets and, you know, they were evil, godless commies and whatever else.
So, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I just think it's like, you know, again, people rightly make fun of American fans for saying the Miracle on Ice should, like, get over it. And then the second there's a, did you know Wayne Gretzky turned 72 today? Yeah. Okay. Relax, please. It's all right.
Mm-hmm.
You don't need to. Anyway, we can get back to the injury talk now. Nolan Patrick and Ryan Ellis done for the year. I feel like we probably talked about at least Ryan Ellis last week, but Nolan Patrick.
I don't remember if we did or not, but I feel like that was not, I guess, not a surprise. I mean, obviously the fact that they traded for him last summer and he played like, God, what did you, like single
six
digit?
Games.
Six games. Think, okay, yeah. Wow. Like, Was he hurt when he came over in that trade?
You know, I was trying to remember that. I think there was maybe a little bit of concern, but just mostly because, you know, he has a lot of miles on him or whatever.
Yeah.
But yeah, you talk for a second. I'll try to find.
Yeah, the fact that he. They've already pretty much ruled him out. I mean, it does sound like we may not see this guy again. And yeah, so he came over for Nolan Patrick. That's right. I forget that.
Yeah,
that he was in that
and,
deal.
Oh, what's his name? Philippe Myers, right? Was that the other guy?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So I mean, both of the. I mean, Nolan Patrick as well. Like, very sad to see that, because this was a guy who,
I know, 20, you know, 22
huge
years
prospect,
old or whatever.
Yeah. Presumptive number one pick for a big chunk of his junior career. And, you know, was a prospect at the kind of, you know, up here. And you're the prospect guy, but you know, up here he was in the, you know, like in the Jack Hughes kind of level of prospect, like not a Connor McDavid, but you know, this guy was going to be a franchise player.
Yeah.
And the injury is just, I mean, it seems now as if it's never going to get off the ground. And you like, I hate to see that even more than I hate, not that it's with Ryan Ellis, it isn't awful, but, you know, Ryan Ellis at least got to play a big chunk of his career.
As far as I can see, he was not injured when he went to the Flyers from okay. like quick Googling. So, mm-hmm. yeah, I mean, that real, like, I think we said it last week. I don't really care how this affects the Flyers, like with Ryan Ellis, without Ryan Ellis, it doesn't really make any difference. But like for the guy, you're just like, you know, he's not an old guy. He's like 32 yep. or whatever, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And so to be like, oh, well, you know, he's in a situation where, you know, he can at least like, you know, go through these surgeries. And if his career is over, that sucks for a lot of reasons. But like, you know, he can live a relatively normal, healthy, happy life, even if his like hip's a little fucked up or whatever, probably, presumably, mm-hmm. you know, with enough rehab. Whereas Nolan Patrick, you're like, yeah, is this kid going to have to retire just to at age 22, just to be able to, you know, breathe a little easier by mm-hmm. like by the time he's 50 or whatever. Like that sucks, dude.
Yeah, no, it's a terrible thing. And it's, you know, we say it from time to time, and it's maybe a little cliche, but it's worth remembering. Like these are people. They are not just, you know, names on a roster somewhere. Yeah, it stinks. It's you cross your fingers and hope that, you know, we have seen guys that we thought were done and the comeback does happen, but it's rare. And this one is certainly not trending in that direction, unfortunately.
Yeah. Along those lines, let's talk about the other guy from the Flyers, Sean Couturier, where it seems like people were like, oh, you know, he might come back in February. He might miss the whole season. Ruptured disc, I believe, is what happened to him. And you don't like that. But then I think it was Ren Lavoie tweeted the other day, like, oh, it might only be like a month.
Yeah, this
and
is,
I saw no follow-up on this.
This is very weird, right? Because, like, we've seen everything from he's going to be out for a while, potentially season-ending. I've seen references to potentially career-ending. Now,
yeah.
Let me be clear, that was people asking the question based on information that's filtering out. This wasn't anybody reporting that or anything like that. But, yeah, people asking, like, is it possible that this guy is done? And then you see maybe it's a lot less than that. It's tough to say. I mean, it's very possible that this is just a case where, you know, that there's a process in place and then we see how it goes. And
yeah.
I think pretty I was going to say pretty clearly the Flyers season is a write-off and you know, they're not going to rush anyone back. Do they know that? I don't know. We all know that, but do they?
I think, you know, again, you never want to talk about it like that it's bad, that like it's good for these players to be injured or whatever. Like that's not the correct framing. But like Couturier and Ellis, if they're healthy, they help the Flyers get an extra 4 wins between them or yeah. whatever.
Which the Flyers want.
Which they
according
want,
to the boss, right? Yes, the boss doesn't think they're rebuilding.
It would be counterproductive for what the team should actually be doing. And, yes. you know, even with them, I don't think, like, I think this is, you know, the 20th best team in the league or whatever. But without them, well, they could drop to like 24th or 25th. That helps. I don't know.
I think they could be lower than that.
Yeah. I mean, a lot depends on Carter Hart, obviously. I don't know why we're talking about the Flyers so much, but a lot depends on Carter Hart.
They got a lot of the injured guys.
Sure. But like Carter Hart, that everybody was like, oh, he's been bad the last couple of years. And everyone's like, oh, he's really taken the pandemic hard. He's really struggled with it. Well, Joe Brandon came out there the other day. He said the pandemic's over. So yeah. Now Carter Hart has to be good. And if he's not, which would be totally understandable given the team in front of him, I don't know what the floor is on this team. They're pretty bad.
Yeah, Carter Hart is it's been one very bad year, and then last year was not very bad, but it was also not great.
Yeah.
So 905, see where that goes,
a little below the league average.
Yep. Yeah, and you know, obviously we don't know beyond that what situations he may be dealing with or have to
deal with
as the season goes on. So we'll kind of wait and see on him. But you're right. It's not like they have a great backup plan in place there, you wouldn't think.
Nope. Let's talk about another young goalie real quick. Spencer Knight signs a 3-year extension, $4.5 million against the cap. Kicks in not like 3 days from now, but next season. And so that means the Panthers are on the hook next season to spend $14.5 million on goaltending.
Yep.
And something has to give is my theory on this one.
You would certainly think, because it's not like the goaltending has been amazing.
No, for sure.
So, yeah, you would think something has to give. And I mean, Sergei Bobrovsky is signed 4 more years, which means his contract ends at the same time as Spencer Knight. So it's not even like there's a staggered thing where you could say, oh, well, this is where the torch will be passed. I don't know. I mean, Bobrovsky's 34. You wonder if they're already in the mode where they're like, yeah, in 2 years, he'll have some sort of hip problem and we'll shut him down. And that's the way it goes. But the other piece is, does having a contract in place make Spencer Knight easier to trade?
Yeah. I think there it's just going to be a situation where they are desperately trying to move Sergei Bobrovsky this summer. He has a full no move. Like he has complete control. Yeah, it says he has a 16 team no trade list starting in July 2024. So that's not happening anytime soon.
To use the old joke, like his $10 million cap hit is his no trade clause.
Like, of course.
Who is going to? It's so strange, eh? Like, you know, when they signed him, I think everybody went, oh, okay, that's too much money for a goalie. But when they signed him, he was a 2-time Vezina winner. Like, you know, a lot of people were like, yeah, I mean, that's on the open market. That's what a guy like that cost you. And then almost as soon as he puts the uniform on, it's like, but by the way, he's now untradeable because of that salary.
Yeah, well, the consensus at the time was terrible contract. However, he'll probably be good for them for 2 or 3 years at least.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And you know, he was bad his first season, 900. The next season, he's average. Last year he was like not half bad, actually. Like he was a 913 goalie, which is what he was when he left Columbus. So, you know, like, it was he spectacular? No. Was he a little better than average? Yeah. I think that's fair to say. And, you know, is that worth $10 million? Well, no, of course it isn't, you know.
No.
So,
and I guess we should say the other part of it was when they signed him, it was sort of like the Panthers need to do something. They have been irrelevant for so long. They at the time didn't have the goaltending,
And everyone thought they were getting Panarin in that summer as well.
Yeah. So you know if you're gonna pay, maybe they're paying a little bit of a tax, in terms of luring a guy to what at the time was a lousy situation, and they're a great team now. So in that sense, yeah, maybe he at least stabilized, but I don't know. Because, I mean, didn't they get, like, did they draft Spencer Knight that year, the same year that they?
Let's see here. Spencer Knight, when was the Bobrovsky contract? That was 1920. So that sounds right for Spencer Knight.
Bobrovsky, he signed, it was 2019.
Yeah, and they, so they drafted Spencer Knight and then immediately signed Sergei Bobrovsky.
Right, which is one of, I mean, you draft a goalie, you're not expecting him for a few years, and it's probably one of those things where you say, like, hey, well, what if this guy's ready in 3? Well, it'll be a nice problem to have. Well, now you've got the problem, and it's,
yeah, and it's
maybe not as nice as you, not as nice as you hoped it would be.
Yeah, it's a really interesting, I'm fascinated to see what they do. And
I guess worth pointing out, they're, despite having Bobrovsky, despite the big contract for Tkachuk, like, they're not in awful cap situation.
No, they're not.
Even with the, like, Barkov's new deal and that, like, they're, like, this isn't a disastrous, they've got Ekblad on a really team-friendly deal. So it's not one of these things where it's like, oh, they're screwed next year. They got to move somebody. Like, no, they'd be okay, but it certainly limits your flexibility.
Yeah. The reason it feels bigger than it is that they're eating a huge cap hit on Keith Yandel this year on his buyout. And then next year it drops to $1.2 million.
Okay.
That's why it feels like you're like right up against the cap. But they, so you know, they have like $12 million to spend next year.
Yeah, already. Patrick Hornquist comes off the cap too, and
yeah, they have like $12 million to spend on, and they have like, you know, what is it 16 players signed, and that doesn't include any rookies they want to. Not that they have a ton of rookies that they're ready to shuffle into the lineup or anything, but yeah, so they're, you know. It, like you say, could be a lot worse, but they're all in, so good for them. The other thing to say about all this is that I think it was Elliot Friedman yesterday was like, oh, we got some projected salary cap numbers for the next few seasons. So it goes up another $1 million next summer, so to 83.5. And then for 24-25, 88. For 25, 26, 92, approximately. Yep.
So here come the big leaps. And again, this is projected. This is the NHL ballparking. Any number of things could happen to prevent this. But this is the light at the end of the tunnel of the flat cap era. One more year after this one. And then it opens up. Just in time for Austin Matthews to be a free agent.
That's
Have you heard
right.
about this?
He's going to make who? Okay, let's put it this way: the cap is going to be 92 in like 5 years. Who do you think is the first guy to make $15 million against the cap? Do you think it's Austin Matthews?
I don't think so.
Okay,
I might think that. I mean, it wouldn't. It wouldn't completely shock me, but I think maybe it might be McDavid when he's up in, because isn't 2026, I think?
Yeah, that's his runs through 25-26. So by the time his expires, the cap will have presumably already hit 92.
Mm-hmm.
At which point, you know, we're talking maybe 95 for the 26-27 season. I think Draisaitl beats him to it personally.
Okay. When does Draisaitl?
The year before that. Okay. So when the cap is $92 million, he, again, projected, he will be on that.
That is
16% of the cap.
It feels like that's going to be a tough negotiation for the Oilers, because it will almost feel like you're negotiating with both guys at the same time.
For sure.
Because whatever you give Draisaitl, you got to like start with $1 million more for McDavid, you would think. Now, maybe they agree to come in at matching deals or whatever. I don't know. That's also, Draisaitl will be the big one that summer. Mitch Marner is also up that year. And again, that, depending on what Austin Matthews got, that could play into that, because last time around, Mitch Marner wanted to be in the Austin Matthews ballpark because his friends told him he was. So we'll see. It'll be interesting. I as a Leafs fan, I hate to say this, but maybe some of these guys will hit the market, and that's like, free agency is fun for everyone other than the team, the franchise that's getting absolutely destroyed by it. So We'll see, but it will be nice. And I'll tell you, I know I made this point before. You know, Nathan McKinnon's going to be fine, Matthews, McDavid. There are going to be at least some guys in 2 or 3 years that are superstars close to that tier who are still going to have 4 years left on like an $8 million max length deal. Right.
Yeah.
And they're going to be looking at their agent going, what the hell were we doing? That we locked in for 8 years when the cap was flat, knowing it was going to start to shoot up in 2 or 3 years. What were you thinking?
I just went and looked at Cale Makar. He's signed for $9 million through 2027. Boy, that's a lot of money to leave on the table, Cale. Yeah.
It's like, ooh. It's like Jack Hughes at $8 million or whatever.
Sure,
like,
yeah.
You know, like even like a Tim Stützle, like there's certainly more risk that he doesn't reach that level, but if he does, like, and I know every time I say this, people are like, oh, well, you know, like $8 million is enough. And it's like, yeah, well, but if $8 million is enough, then $7 million is enough, and so is six. So why did they ask for eight?
Right.
Like, why, you know, at some point, like, you want to be paid what you're worth. And I mean, we just saw Nathan McKinnon come off of it, right? Where he was like, yeah, I was kind of sick of hearing about how great my contract was. I don't want to hear about that anymore. And it's like, yeah, you can imagine that you would kind of sick of, imagine like every time you're just interacting in any way with eventually it comes up like how underpaid you are, like how laughably little money you make compared to what you should. And you're just like, no, that's great. I'm really high. And you got to like fake like you did it on purpose for the team.
Yeah. I wonder about like Robert Thomas and Jordan Kyrou, who just signed $8 million deals. You know, obviously these guys are not going to be like the superstars of the league, but they're really good players.
Mm-hmm.
And they're 3 years from now, they're going to be like, shit, that was stupid. You shouldn't have done that.
They could be. And, you know, I mean, look, guys in that range and Stützle and I don't think I put Jack Hughes in that, but, you know, guys that we're not quite sure what they're going to be. Maybe some of those guys are like settled in as 25 goal guys and they're like, man, it's so funny that I got sure. a max like after my one good year. But boy, Jason Robertson, man, I want to see that. Like if you're him, are you not sitting there going like, oh, I'll take a 2 year deal?
Yeah. No,
let's do this in 2 years when the cap goes up.
All right. Why don't we take a quick break and then we'll come back and talk about him and the other unsigned RFAs. How's that sound? All right. Great. Be right back.
Our next partner has a product that gets used in my house literally every day. Athletic Greens. Still, to this day, the wife has taken it every day, ever since she started stealing it from me when they sent us some samples. I did get to try it a few times, and I was a fan, but apparently not enough of a fan to pry it out of my wife's hands, because she swears by this stuff. So what is it? Okay. With one delicious scoop of Athletic Greens, you're absorbing 75 high-quality vitamins, minerals, whole food source superfoods, probiotics, and adaptogens to help you start your day right. It's a special blend of ingredients that supports your gut health, your nervous system, your immune system, your energy, recovery, focus, and aging, all of the things. My wife takes it every day in the morning. It's the first thing along with the breakfast sort of thing. You can take it whenever you want, though. And it's basically, it's a lifestyle-friendly decision that you're making. Whether you eat keto, paleo, vegan, dairy-free, gluten-free, any of that, this is low sugar, no nasty chemicals, artificial anything. And it's a small micro habit with big benefits. You get used to taking it every day, and it's one thing you do every single day, and you're taking great care of yourself. And it has over 7,000 five-star reviews. So if you don't believe me, go check those out, and you'll see people swear by this stuff. Right now, it's time to reclaim your health and arm your immune system with convenient daily nutrition, especially heading into the flu and cold season. It's just one scoop in a cup of water every day. That's it. No need for a million different pills and supplements to look out for your health. To make it easy, Athletic Greens is going to give you a free one-year supply of immune-supporting vitamin D and 5 free travel packs with your first purchase. All you have to do is visit athleticgreens.com/puck. Again, that is athleticgreens.com/puck to take ownership over your health and pick up the ultimate daily nutritional insurance.
All right, so we teased it on the other side of the break there. Let's talk Jason Robertson. Still no deal, not with the Stars in camp or anything like that. I like you say, probably takes a short-term deal. I think, you know, everybody's been kind of saying like 2 or 3 years, under $8 million just to make it work for the Stars cap. And then 2 or 3 years from now, he can get a $12 million deal or whatever. And max it out, like 8 years, $12 million, I think would
that's
would
the make time a lot to do it. Yeah.
Yeah, for sure. See, but that I guess my point is, like, if I'm the Stars, I'm doing the opposite. And now maybe this is Jason Robertson having a good agent and going, like, do not sign for 8 fucking years. You'd be insane to do it. You know, that very well could be.
I would go that way, but then there was the Stars owner, right? When he was on that podcast or whatever it was, when he was like, oh, these young guys, they get too much money too soon. You know, you used to be that your second contract was. So it felt like he was arguing for the short-term side, unless I misinterpreted it. But
no, that's kind of how I heard it when I listened to that.
Yeah. So I guess what it might be interesting is, assuming it's a short-term deal, if they can get it to 3 years, then he basically gets Jamie Benn's money when it comes off the cap, because Jamie Benn's got 3 years left on that.
Right.
Very not good contract. Tyler Seguin, I won't even say how much longer that one's still got, because oof. But you could do 3 years. But I don't know. If I'm Jason Robertson, I might go, 3 years feels a little long. You know, that could be it. You know, you could sit here and go like, oh, would they really miss training camp over 2 versus 3 years? And yeah, maybe you would, because what do you settle that number at? If it's 3 years, if it's 2 years, how do you do that? I don't know. It's interesting, but maybe, I don't know. If you're Jason Robertson, maybe you want it 3 years because you don't want to be coming off looking for a new deal when Ben's still on the books, assuming he is.
Yeah, for sure.
I don't know. It's interesting to me. I feel like if you could sit his agent down and be like, give me the honest, like, what's the strategy here? They would explain something to you and you'd go, yeah, that makes sense. But there's a few different ways it could go, and I'm just not sure which they're leaning at.
Yeah, I'm trying to remember I have fucking Cap Friendly open. Let me go to this tab here. Ottinger just signed for 3 years. So he's up in 25-26. Or that's when he needs a new contract. It's for 25-26. Which, again, that's like the $92 million cap year.
Right. Which is smart. Like, we just finished with Bobrovsky. Like, you'd be crazy to give a young goalie, and I like Jake Ottinger a lot, but you'd be crazy to give him more than 3 years. Like, you want to go short term on goalies, because you have they're so much more unpredictable than forwards are.
For sure. But like, my point in saying that is, instantly if he's any good at all over the next 3 years, he's like, okay, money please. Yep. And then Jason Robertson is also going, money please, and you're right back where you started.
You know what? That's true. I'm saying, like, you know, Jamie Benn's, that's got to be fun for Jamie Benn. You got two guys in the room that are like,
everybody's like, get this fucker off.
Yeah, how you feeling, so, man? You a little beat up? Because
how's that knee?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And then he gives him the old Mo Sizlak right in the back of the knee, lead pipe.
Pavelski comes off the cap for them after this year.
Yes,
which,
that's true.
Is which will help, and he could stick around
because he can still play a little.
He could still play.
He played last year anyway.
But even if he sticks around, he was great last year. Even if he sticks around, like, maybe the number comes down, or maybe not. Who knows? I don't know. Maybe that's the flip side of having your owner go out there and be like, "We used to give all the money just to old guys," and Joe Pavelski, you're like, "All right, give me my money."
Yeah. Did you see, and again, this is fucking like training camp and practice lines and all this kind of stuff, but did you see the thing that they're doing with Robertson out of camp is they put Roope Hintz with Denis Gurianov, and it like has looked good in preseason games and stuff like that?
No.
And the only reason that's funny is Gurianov like couldn't get minutes with Rick Bonus. An actual good coach comes in and he's like, oh, this guy should be playing with like our third best forward.
Uh-huh.
Maybe second best.
Nice.
Depending on how you feel about Pavelski. But yeah, I thought that was so fucking funny. I'm like, boy, this sport is insanely just like all these people who are like supposed to be high level coach. Like, I know that in the NFL or the NBA, there are coaches who have different approaches or whatever, but it feels like they wouldn't overthink, like, I couldn't possibly play the, you know, fourth most skilled player on my team in the starting lineup because, you know, like in hockey, though, everybody's just like, yeah, coach doesn't like Gurianov. That's how it is.
Yep. Well, that is, you do see that a little bit in the NFL where guys like just come in and they're like, hey, I'm going to actually put you on the field and let's see what you can do. But,
yeah. Oh, you see, I guess I don't know.
But in hockey, but you feel like, I bet you with that, if you sat down, they'd be like, yeah, it's because we have this scheme and he doesn't block well on that side. Whereas in hockey, it would just be like, I saw him laugh in practice once. I hated him ever since.
He didn't back check in a preseason game 3 years ago.
Yeah.
He's been on my shit list.
He wore a really flashy, brightly colored tie to a team dinner.
Yeah, his dress shirt was purple. So he's got to go. All right, let's talk about Rasmus Sandin. Doesn't seem like this is going.
Nothing going on here. Yeah, this is the ongoing situation with the Leafs where they had Sandin and Liljegren. Liljegren signed the cheap short-term deal. I think it was hoped, maybe even assumed that Sandin would as well, and hasn't happened yet. The injuries, you wonder if some of the injuries that the Leafs have already had in a sense, give the player a little more leverage because it clears up some cap space as well as, in theory, pushes them to get him into the lineup. But I don't know. I mean, he's a good young player. He would be a potential, breakout is too strong a word, but you'd want to see him move up the lineup this year. But this isn't like, this doesn't feel like a Willie Nylander thing where like when he missed the 2 months a few years ago sitting at home and you're just like, oh, they've got to figure out a way to do this. Like, I don't get that sense, certainly among Leaf fans, that it's like, that there's a level of panic here. I mean, this is a guy that if he's, you want him there, but if he's not there, it's like, all right, this isn't going to screw up your whole season. So, and it's one of those things where in theory, he's got no leverage. Because, he's team control, right. And unless there was an offer sheet, and that doesn't seem to be happening, what can you do? But he's trying to manufacture some leverage and maybe is doing so successfully, but it's just, I don't know. I think this is one of those guys where if it's not Toronto, I think most people have never even heard of this situation.
Well, only insofar as he's one of four unsigned RFAs after camp has started.
Yep.
Like, that's why. Because, I don't expect him to really ring the bell here. Like, he's going to sign maybe 3 years, a little higher of an AAV than he should get. But, yeah. Like.
And the Leafs clearly would like him shorter term, lower cap, and then you kick the can down the road on your cap problems. And
yeah, again, cap's going to be $92 million in like 3 years. So,
yep.
Yeah, anyway. But like, what I'm saying is Sandin in that way is like Nick Hague, who is unsigned by Vegas and has in fact left Vegas. He's like practicing with an OHL team now. So it doesn't seem like that's going well at all. And could most Vegas Golden Knights fans pick Nick Hague out of a fucking lineup?
Yeah.
Like, I was looking at like, oh, you know, these guys are going to be the number one centers for all their teams. And it was just their headshots. It was like a little online quiz thing. Mm-hmm. And I was just like, these are the number one centers. I don't recognize like 70% of these guys.
Yep.
You know, so like how far down the list do I have to go to before I'm like, oh, I know exactly what Nick Hague looks like for sure. Mm-hmm.
Yep.
And, you know, look, Vegas obviously has bigger problems than whether Nick Hague resigns or not.
Yep. Yeah.
He's a good-ish young defenseman.
Dude, but like, maybe while you're practicing with your OHL team, like, strap the pads on. Just, you know, let a few of those photos get out there. See what happens. Who knows?
But, yeah, I mean, their left side you know, if they don't have Theodore playing on his offside, like it goes Theodore, Martinez, Braden McNabb, Ben Hutton. Nick Hague's probably better than Ben Hutton. And certainly, like, Vegas would have more of a reason to play him, you know, just because, like, he's 23 and they have had him in the system for a while, and Ben Hutton's just a guy, you know. But, like, yeah, that's a tough spot for him to be in, Hague, where it's like, you don't really have leverage here because they have three lefty who are better than you, for sure.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. Anyway. Yeah, I again, he's going to sign for short money, probably. Why would he deserve more than that? But, like, yeah. I don't think he's a bad player or anything like that. I like him. But
yeah, no, it's like every now and then you do see a guy, like, in that zone get, like, 4 years. You're like, what? But, no, I mean, it's
I wouldn't balk at him getting 4 years. That, like, I'd be like, oh, okay. As long as the numbers, you know, not like, yeah, if it's 4 years, $4 million, I'm like, oh, ee. But Vegas doesn't really have the money to do that anyway. They gotta make, that's the other thing, is they probably gonna make a trade or two before. Obviously, they got some guys they can put on the LTIR, but, well, I guess they should be pretty close to fine just putting Weber and Lehner on the LTIR because they're at 90. Where are they? 92.7, and those two guys probably are 12 combined, right? Like Weber's over 7 and Lehner's 5x5. So
yeah, and I mean, Weber, you go and get Weber because you're trying to maximize and. It's that whole weird thing where teams are going to go on LTIR actually want to get more injured guys, and we all just pretend that we get it. But yeah, they'll get under there. But yeah, they may be limited on when they can do it and how it works and all of that stuff.
So that also is playing a role. But then here's one. You want to talk about one where you're like, what? Is Alex Formanton. Formanton. I never know how to pronounce it.
Formanton.
Yeah, okay. He's like holding out or whatever. Well, holding out isn't the right term, but you know what I mean.
He doesn't have a contract, and he plays for the Senators, for those who don't recognize
and he's like
the name.
Fine.
But he was pretty good last year. He had nearly 20 goals last year as a rookie, first full year, and he was pretty good. But how do you
109 career games, 23 goals, 39 points. Like, I don't know how you're like, you know what I deserve is like a bunch of money.
Yeah.
You're 23 years old, brother. You're like, I get you want to cash out, but, or cash.
Well, I mean, you don't know whether, you know, with none of these, we don't know what the ask is. We don't know if it's about years or term. The only thing I will say, and we'll kind of leave it at this, is Alex Formanton is, in addition to being young and not having a body of work and all the things that make this complicated, he's one of the guys who was on that 2018
Team Canada. Right.
And has not, to my knowledge, issued any kind of statements or put anything out there. So who knows whether that is having any sort of effect in the background? Who knows if that is contributing to any hesitancy on the part of the Senators or what. It's quite possible that it's not, and that's just but it certainly is hard to ignore that fact hanging over it as wondering if that could be part of what's going on.
Yep, totally forgot about that. So there you go. All right, one other player who is, his name's kind of been out there of late, is Jacob Chychrun. Basically
late for the last 2 years.
Sure, but like it came up again because he basically said, "Trade me right fucking now." Was his the general thrust on this one? I believe.
Yeah, I think you're paraphrasing a little bit, but I think you've got the basic.
He wants to go to a team that's like good and stuff.
Yeah,
hard to blame him.
And you know the Coyotes. His name was out there all last year, and I said at the time, I was like, this feels like a bluff, or it feels like a a bait and switch where they're getting because his contract is so cheap, and you know, we all know what's going on in Arizona. We know they're tanking. We know this, but I mean, you got to put some guys on the ice. But maybe not. You know, maybe it's the Alex DeBrincat thing, right? We said the same thing with him in Chicago, and you know, they moved him. So I think if you can get the price, sure. But now he seems to be kind of going like, yeah, I don't really want to do another whole year of being on top of the trade board, and then because he's still signed for what, 3 more years?
I believe so. Yeah, and he's still hurt also, I believe. Mm-hmm. If I'm not, or recovering, I think he had surgery in the offseason.
Okay. So he's been mentioned a lot in Ottawa as a guy that they would go after.
Christ, they need the help on the blue line, eh?
They do. They absolutely do. And in theory, depending on how optimistic you are, it's the last spot that they need the help. So yeah, you could talk yourself into it. But we'll see. He's a good guy, a good player. Was a much better player 2 years ago than he was last year, but who knows how much having all this trade stuff hanging over you may have impacted that.
Yep, for sure. And here's the thing too about him is obviously like he had that one big year and everybody's like, well, that's what he is. And it's like every other year he was like kind of not very good. And also this is a guy who never plays a full season. Never. Listen to this. 68 career or 68 games in his rookie year, 50, 53, 63, 56. That obviously was a shortened season. 47. So like, that's a guy who's missed a lot of games. And, you know, obviously, you know, the Coyotes probably played 70 the year he played 63. And then the next year he didn't miss anything. And that's the one year he goes insane, scoring goals. He scored 18 goals,
which is, but like, that's what you talk yourself into if you're trading for
right. But like, this is a guy where if I'm looking at trading for him, I'm like, oh, well, I mean, this guy, seems to have a health problem a little bit, you know? And again, he had off-season surgery. He might miss time to start the year. I don't know.
Yep. And everything you just said, that's what GMs who call Arizona are saying.
Sure. Yeah.
To try to drive the price down. And obviously it hasn't worked yet. But maybe it does. If he's going to put the pressure on, then maybe. I mean, you know, we all know it's been talked about to death, the situation Arizona's going into this year in the arena and everything. But some guys are not really going to be thrilled about being in that situation. Especially for the next 3 years. This though may be the sort of thing where Arizona management is going to him going, look, man, get healthy, get back on the ice, score a bunch of goals, preferably on like a Saturday night on Hockey Night in Canada. And
right.
Then do it against the Leafs.
Yeah.
Do it against the Leafs. Score a hat trick against the Jets or have two good shifts against the Leafs, and that'll knock the price up and we'll get it done.
Yeah, I'm really curious because it seems like this is a kind of untenable situation. And it's funny. I just saw a tweet from Travis Yost come across the timeline where he's like, as far as I can tell, like the Coyotes, a team with like no real source of serious revenue here, are paying Lawson Crouse and Zach Cassian a combined like $7.5 million. This is crazy.
Yep. Mm-hmm. You got to pay somebody.
You got to pay somebody. And, well, I mean, what do they care? They're trying to be bad.
Mm-hmm.
Call up every bad team in the league. We'll give your worst player fucking $8 million against the cap. We don't care. Doesn't matter to us at all. Yep. Call us for every retained salary transaction you want to make. Like, that's what I'm doing if I'm the Coyotes. Oh, yeah. You know?
Well, I mean, they're already the first call that everyone makes.
For sure. And so, yeah, I mean, the idea, oh, we couldn't possibly stand to lose Jacob Chychrun, like, just trade him. You know, obviously you want to get a nice return for him or whatever,
but the problem is, like, he's like their last asset other than their cap space that they could get a return on.
Clayton Keller.
Could you get it for Clayton Keller at this point? Like, Clayton Keller is one of my guys I can't figure out. Is Clayton Keller good?
I think he is. Yeah, maybe he's not, you know, like, what was he, the seventh pick, overall pick or something like that? Like, maybe he's not like what you think of as, oh, this guy is obviously a number 10 or a top 10 pick or whatever. Mm-hmm. Like,
I mean, he was nearly a point a game last year, but, and I know it's Arizona. Like, I'm not going to sit here and act like I was, you know, watching the hell out of the Coyotes down the stretch last year. But, you know, we talk about all these guys with their max length deals. Clayton Keller is one of those guys. He got his 8 years, and you're kind of sitting there going, maybe that worked out okay for him. I don't know.
Yeah, he's a guy where I think, you know, you put him on any playoff team's like second line, you're like, oh, this Clayton Keller guy, like, you can play a little bit. You know what I mean? Like, look at the bums he has to play with for most of his career, you know? I don't know. I'm obviously not like saying, oh, the Coyotes have so many guys you would want to acquire, right? But they do have a lot of guys who are coming off the books next year. And, mm-hmm. You know, obviously that Lawson Crouse deal stinks out loud. It's fucking awful, right? But, you know, Nick Schmaltz, can he play a little bit? Yeah, I think he can, you know? And that's another guy they have signed. He's signed for 4 more years. Well, 3 after this one, but you know what I mean. And that's another guy they could trade if they wanted to. But like you said with DeBrincat, at some point, like, are you just going to trade literally everybody? You know, you got to have
these teams. That is the plan.
Yeah, well, what's interesting is they're like, we're going to sell out every game this year. Even with the higher prices and everything, like, they're like, we're 100% going to sell out every game. No question about it. And I think a lot of that is just the curiosity factor and out-of-town fans coming in and being like, yeah, I'll pay $300 to sit, 8 feet away from Austin Matthews or whatever.
Uh-huh.
Not a bad seat in the house, as they say.
Yeah, I'm still kind of feeling like let's believe it when we see it on this. We're gonna sell out. We're gonna, because didn't they at one point also say they were gonna make as much money, like they were gonna?
Well, I think if they sell out every game at the higher, like, just math wise, that works out. That if they do sell every single ticket and luxury box and everything like that, it's going to be a situation where it's like, oh yeah, no, they definitely made more money, because how many of those, let's say they had 11,000 people on average in the building last year. How many of those actually bought a ticket?
Well, that's true.
And bought like a $29 ticket or whatever.
So it says more about how much they weren't making last year.
Correct. Than, yeah. That is kind of my thing with it. It's like, oh yeah, no, it's like, yeah, you could make more than you made last year, like collecting cans. You know, so like, let's not spike the football on that one. But yeah, anyway, you know what I wanted to talk to you about? This is a thing that it's going on in the KHL these days. Is do you know what Sergei Fedorov's thing is?
No.
In overtime, have you not heard about this?
Did I hear about it? Okay, tell me, because this now is ringing a bell that he does, has like some weird thing that.
If his team wins the opening draw in overtime, he pulls the goalie.
Okay. Do they?
And it seems to work more often than it doesn't, or, you know, as often as it doesn't, certainly.
Now, do they have the same rule with the loser point that we have in the NHL, though?
I don't, but they. I think they must.
They must not, right? Like,
yeah. Okay. But isn't that interesting?
That's it. Isn't it's
he does it a creative. Lot.
Yeah.
A lot, yeah.
So they win the draw and the goalie comes right off and they just go 4-on-3.
Yep. And we should say that, like, you know, the KHL is a lot different from the NHL insofar as there's a lot of disparity between the best teams and the worst teams, like, or right. The best teams and even, like, the next 5 best teams, you know? So, like, you can maybe do that. Like, you couldn't do that if against the Winnipeg Jets, maybe. Even if we're saying the Winnipeg Jets aren't good, mm-hmm. like the Tampa Bay Lightning couldn't do it against the Winnipeg Jets because the Winnipeg Jets are, you know, they have enough guys that can hurt you, whereas maybe like Kunlun Red Star does not, you know?
Right. And you couldn't, so you couldn't do it in the NHL. People don't know. There is an obscure rule in the NHL that if you pull your goalie in overtime and you lose, you don't get the extra point. You don't get the loser point. And that was to discourage a situation back in the day where there were ties where like both teams pulled their goalie, which to me sounds fun as hell, but I think to some people in the NHL felt like it would get kind of ridiculous. So they put that rule in place and it's still there, even though in theory we don't need it anymore. We still have it, but if we ever got rid of that rule, which maybe they should.
Hey, why
not? That would be kind of neat to see how that played out.
Yeah. Anyway, yeah, that just like, you know, I saw that the other day. I think he did it for a second time in the preseason over there. Or maybe the regular season started.
He's really interesting because his name came up a little bit with the Red Wings job.
Mm-hmm.
I don't feel like it was ever all that serious, but you kind of heard that mentioned. And he feels like a guy who could be in the NHL coaching at some point.
Yeah, and this is a guy who immediately rockets to the top of that hottest coaches list. Sergei Fedorov, are you kidding me?
Well, no, I mean, he's no Jay Woodcroft. He doesn't have the raw animal magnetism.
You knew that list was fucked because the Derek Lalonde was number three. First of all, most fans are like, I don't know who Derek Lalonde is. Don't know what he looks like.
Yep.
But second of all, then you see Derek Lalonde and you're like, well, there's something wrong here.
Yep. Yeah, that whole...
This is why you can't leave things up to AI, folks.
It almost feels as if like random shady gambling companies sending out lists are doing it just to get attention.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Anyway, let's talk about one more thing that we got here for you this week. Seattle Kraken, two news items on the Kraken here. First of all, when I was doing what we learned the other day, this is an actual headline in the Seattle Times. I feel like this is bad news for any team. This is the headline. With novelty worn off, Kraken must improve to regain fans' attention.
Uh-huh.
Uh-oh.
I have bad news about whether they have improved all that much. Now, I'm assuming this is this related to the NBA rumors?
You know, it's funny. We talked about those NBA rumors, and I was like, oh, yeah, whatever happened with that? And I went back and looked like a week later, and that guy had deleted the tweet.
Oops. Okay.
Classic whoopsie. So maybe that's like not a thing at all. I haven't seen a word. I follow a lot of NBA people. I haven't seen a single word about any of this, since then.
Okay.
I just Googled it
for Seattle.
This is a quote from Sam Presti, who is the GM of the Thunder, but was GM of the Supersonics when they moved. And this is a quote from him. They will have a basketball team again. I think all of us here think that's a positive thing. It's a great place, great fans, and the arena they've built there, it's spectacular. When it happens, it's going to be great. That's the quote. So other than that, I have seen nothing about this in the last 3 weeks or whatever it's been since that rumor came and went, and the guy who posted it is like, what rumor? So
good. I mean, the Kraken are, like, I wrote this on a thing that's going out this week. Like, you look at them last year, and they're such disappointment, and, they didn't make any trades, and they didn't do this and that at the draft. Sure. And then it's sort of like, yeah, but they're also an expansion team. And mm-hmm, this is what sure. every expansion team ever that wasn't the Golden Knights has looked like.
So, in any sport, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, pretty much any sport. Like, it's you're supposed to be bad year one. Like, I think the NBA, I don't really know, but even in the NFL, like, even the Panthers and Jaguars were bad year one before they got good in year two. Yeah, but it was not a very inspiring year.
No, and like, you know, I think the number one thing that you're if you're a Kraken guy, you're selling, or gal, you're selling yourself on full season of Yanni Gord. We got
I'm gonna stop you right there because that didn't make
my optimism meter.
He was supposed to be, like it or not, he was supposed to be their number one center.
Yeah.
So
full season.
They got Bjorkstrand for nothing. He's a good player.
He is.
And the goaltending can't be worse than it was last year. I'm not saying it's going to be good. I'm just saying it cannot possibly be as bad.
And it wasn't like it was bad last year because they had a couple of bums. Like, it was supposed to be a strength. Goaltending is unpredictable, yeah. but sometimes goaltending is unpredictable in good ways. So that, I would buy that as my optimism.
The other thing I'd be optimistic about, first of all, Matty Beniers, but like I'm not like, we need Shane Wright in the NHL this year. Send that kid back to junior. What's the point? But if they're really bad, maybe they go out and get a real coach.
Yeah.
Just saying that would help.
Is that allowed? Are you able to do that?
Some NHL teams would say, no, we're not allowed to go out and get an actual good coach. Okay. Like, look, when Dave Haxtell was coming out of North Dakota, I wanted it to work. And I'm going to say, I don't think he had a lot of tools in Philadelphia or Seattle to really work with.
Mm-hmm.
But like the track record just isn't there, man. You know, like what else is there to say? The guy hasn't had a good season yet. He's been the coach for what, 5 years in the NHL?
And he was an assistant in Toronto and he was special teams, and the special teams stunk there.
Yeah.
Which is why Leaf people were all surprised, I think it's fair to say, when that decision got made.
Yeah. The other reason for a little bit of optimism. Now, if you look at the Seattle Kraken's very epic Twitter account, this is a team that's like, folks, we're getting a mascot soon.
It's exciting. I didn't know they didn't have a mascot, but a little anthropomorphic Kraken, I'm assuming.
Yeah.
Except he'll have like big googly eyes like Gritty.
Yeah, did you see Gritty was on the ABC show Abbott Elementary?
No, I have no idea what that is.
Okay, it's a good show. I really like it. It's about an elementary school in Philadelphia, and so the try-hard teacher is like, oh, I got Gritty to come to the school, but she got him to come on the wrong day, and so he didn't really. Here's the thing. They're like, oh, Gritty's going to be on this show. And you're like, oh, he's going to like pour a bag of popcorn on somebody's head or something like that. Like, he's going to get up to his wacky hijinks.
Yeah.
No, he just does the thing where he like wiggles his belly around. And that's like the only thing he does that's in any way like Gritty-esque. And it's like, look, I know this is the most boring league on the planet, but like, doesn't Gritty have to do more than that on like on a TV show?
Like, now I'm picturing like a negotiation on like what Gritty is going to do. Like when you're bringing like an old pro wrestler in, it's like, all right, I'll come in, but I'm not taking any bumps. I'll tag in, I'll shake my belly, hit the high spots, and I'm out.
Yeah. Gritty didn't even hit the high spots. He did like, you know, like Bret Hart's five moves of doom.
Mm-hmm.
He did like just the snap suplex and then was like, okay, that's it. I'm not doing the elbow drop. Not doing the bulldog. Reverse bulldog, the heart attack, some call it.
Yeah.
Not doing any of them. Certainly not breaking out the fucking sharpshooter. Are you kidding me? But I will wiggle my belly around.
Yeah.
That's
the
it.
The backbreaker was the other one of
the backbreaker. Yeah, of course. But yeah, it's just so this should be fun. Gritty is like the one fun thing about the NHL, universally agreed upon that it is fun. And then he was like, that's not really the kind of comedy I do when I'm on TV, brother. All right, my bad.
Yeah.
But yeah, the Kraken's.
Is it maybe do you think he's like is the mascot business like the stand-up comedy business where like you don't want to do a joke on TV that you're still using in the clubs because then people have seen it? Like, I wonder if that's it. If he has like a really good popcorn bit, but he's
They didn't catch Gritty nude or anything. It sucks. You know? But yeah, like I think here's my take on what the Kraken's mascot is. As you say, anthropomorphic, like squid, you know. The arms and legs are tentacles. There's no hands involved. And then there's like four other tentacles or six other tentacles on the head. And everybody's like, wow, this is great.
Yep. That sounds right to me.
And his name will be... What is a guy who was on like the Seattle Metropolitans team? You know what I mean?
Oh,
like,
it's
going to be a throwback to that. His name, Christ, they might just call him Metro or something like that. It would be a stupid name, but like there, it will be in some, my prediction is it will be in some way affiliated with.
Loosely affiliated with like whoever scored the winning goal for the.
Yeah, that's right.
Well, you know what? If that's 1918, like there would be some good mascot names on that team. Like there's definitely some Dusties and Phantoms and.
Let's see here. Will Hockey Reference have the
It will.
Have the 2018 Kraken or Metropolitans? Probably not, right? I don't know. Anyway.
Oh, here we go. NHL.com. Let's click and wait 45 seconds for an NHL.com page to load.
That's right.
No results found. Awesome. Good. That was a good experience. I enjoyed
it. There's a guy named Bernie Morris on that team. There's a guy named Doc Roberts. Great name. Oh, to be a man named Doc Roberts.
I feel like Bernie Morris was the star on that team. I think this could be a Bernie thing.
Don't tell Hillary. Know what I'm saying?
Yep.
But yeah, I'm not seeing anything that's like, oh yeah, this is the name of Cully. Cully Wilson scored 44. He's their fifth all-time leading scorer. Scored 44 career goals. Frank Foyston is their all-time leading goal scorer, 174. And he played there for 8 years. Could name him Frank. Frank the Octopus or whatever.
Yeah. I feel like you got to go Bernie Morris, but you're right. Then you got that situation. What other famous... Seattle athletes.
Oh my God! There was a guy that played there for named Smokey Harris.
Okay. Folks, all right.
Just something to think about.
Let's make this happen.
But yeah, I can't. I can't think of anything better than that. So, with that, why don't we? Why don't we hit everybody with the plugs? Mm-hmm. And Sean, why don't you go first?
Catch me at The Athletic. It's we're well into preview season. I had my 22 most intriguing names that I'm interested in watching this year. Built a roster out of that with enough honorable mentions to get every team in there. Yours will be mentioned. Later this week, I've got my like season preview big post where I mush all the teams into different divisions based on how I think they're going to finish. And then next week will be prediction contest and oddly specific predictions among potentially other things.
Wow. Look at this guy. That's a lot of work.
Yeah.
But hey, here's my plug. For all you college hockey sickos out there and prospect sickos, I wrote maybe the biggest thing I've ever written. About college hockey for elite prospects this week. This is a college hockey season preview. It's between me and JD Burke, who also did some work on it with me. I think this is going to clock in around 7,000-8,000 words.
Oof.
Now, I didn't do all of that myself, but in this rundown, we will have some of the big storylines in college hockey this season, all the coaches, the change teams, there's a couple new teams in college hockey this year, Sean. I don't know if you knew about this.
They did like an expansion. Is it,
two teams were just like, oh, we're a Division I college hockey team now, like starting this year.
You just
declared, and everybody was like, oh, okay.
Okay.
Sounds good. Including one that's coached by Rick Zombo. You remember Rick Zombo?
I do remember Rick Zombo.
Lindenwood University, just outside of St. Louis. Rick Zombo is their coach.
Good to see that he survived getting crushed into the boards by Wendell Clark on one of those great 1980s hits that, like, at the time, you're like, this is amazing. And you look at it now and you're like, that should have been a 40-game suspension.
Yeah, he might as well have brought a gun to the rink and just shot the guy.
Exactly.
A breakdown of all the big news. A breakdown of every conference's like top four or five teams, like who's going to finish where in that conference, kind of a look. My top 10 Hobie picks. The best drafted players in college hockey this year. JD had a nice write up on every one of those guys, and the top college free agents who every team's going to be like, oh, we really got to sign this guy, and every fan in the league is going to talk themselves into, oh, this guy's going to be really good for us, and then maybe he's like a third line guy.
You know what? In my for the first time ever this year in my 22 intriguing guys piece. Mm-hmm. I had a college hockey player. I cheated. I'm only supposed to do NHL, but I threw in Adam Fantilli.
Yeah, Adam Fantilli. He's going to be probably the number three overall pick in this coming draft.
And my thing with him is you've got obviously Connor Bedard. Is the next McDavid. You've got
Matvei Michkov.
Matvei Michkov is the classic, like, Jack Eichel type, like, would be number one in any other year prospect. If Fantilli emerges as, like, not in the Bedard zone, but is, like, another can't-miss franchise guy, that changes the whole math of tanking in the NHL. Because if you finish dead last in the NHL, you're guaranteed a top three pick. That's as far as you can fall. You're not guaranteed top two. In fact, you got a 50% chance of not finishing top two because of the lottery. So if there's two guys, it makes sense to tank. If there's three guys, shoot the puck into your own net, man. Make sure you finish last because you're guaranteed to get one of those. So
there's three
this guy's as good as they think.
Yep.
Oof.
And it seems like he is.
Yes, people seem to think so.
There's a real thought that he could go number two overall because as good as Matvei Michkov is, he's signed in Russia till he's like 22 or something like that. Yep. So you draft this kid, you don't get him for 3 years minimum, right?
Yep. And,
whereas
and who even
Adam
knows,
Soviet
players, it's...
Well, we wish, right?
Yeah.
Soviet? They're just regular Russian
good,
now.
Good point. Yes, thank you.
But Fantilli, you know, he might be a skosh worse than Michkov, but at least you get him for those 3 years that you don't have Michkov, you know? Like, Michkov is basically going to be Kirill Kaprizov kind of a situation where everybody's like, I hope he comes over. And then eventually he does, and everybody's like, wow, this guy's good, you know? Yeah. Let's put it this way. He's so good that, you know, like, that caused Kaprizov to drop in the draft for sure. Like, the question of when he's going to come over. Michkov is so good that will not be a question. There's no way he goes lower than three without, you know, he gets catastrophically injured. He has an unbelievably bad season. Those are the only two things that could really fuck him up.
Yeah. So when you're talking like far better prospect than Kirill Kaprizov.
Yeah, that's right.
Not a bad consolation prize if you don't get Connor Bedard, but again, like the example I used was when it was McDavid and Eichel were the two sure things, and back then you could only drop one spot, so it was the same scenario. If you finished last, you were guaranteed, and if you finished second last, then it was up to the lottery. And we remember how ridiculous it got with the Sabres and the Coyotes, like you know, fans cheering against their own team. And it happened, right? The Coyotes, the Sabres finished last. They get Eichel, who at the time they thought was going to, you know, their franchise consolation prize, and Arizona ends up getting Dylan Strome.
Yep.
It can make a huge swing. So we've already got teams tanking this year. If there's three sure things, oh boy, it could get really ridiculous.
Yeah, and he has a legitimate chance at the Hobie Baker, which Jack Eichel won in his draft year. He won the Hobie Baker. He had 71 points in 40 games or something like that. Unbelievable. You know, dragged BU to a perfectly good BU team, but got them to a national title game where the goalie put the puck in his own net. The less said about that, the better. But yeah, I mean, it's going to be really interesting. Michigan obviously has a lot of talented players, but they also lost Beniers, Kent Johnson, Owen Power, one or two other guys that I'm forgetting off the top of my head. But they also have Luke Hughes, who Devils fans are rightly excited about, and who had a better freshman season than like Cale Makar and Adam Fox did. So the now granted, he was on a much better team, but the idea that Luke Hughes is going to be able to absolutely rip shit up in college hockey this year is like very much on the table. And Logan Cooley, who was the number three pick in this past year's draft, is going to the University of Minnesota. So like they're in the same conference as Michigan. The Big Ten this year is going to be a blast. Other leagues will also be interested. Anyway, that's enough college hockey talk, I think. So yeah, anyway, if you want all that, sign up for EP Rinkside. I love EP at checkout when you order a year-long subscription, and it will become a 15-month subscription as if by magic. And then, check out the Puck Soup Patreon as well. Michon and this other guy we found on the street corner, his name was Craig Minimsky. And he joined us to talk about guys who recently retired or are LTIR retired, and whether those guys should go in the hall.
And he did good, by the way, for a rookie with very little podcasting experience. I thought the kid did all right.
Yeah,
yeah,
pretty impressive. Yeah. So check that out. Puck Soup Patreon is patreon.com/PuckSoup. Check that out, and you know we do a lot of other bonus stuff on there, including we're about to do the mailbag over on the Puck Soup Patreon. So if you want to hear us answer some listener questions this week, head over there, check it all out.
Yep.
And thanks for listening to the show.
Thanks, everyone.
Bye-bye.
Sticks and hits and goals and saves and slap shots and goons. We've got sportly commentary to an NFL commute. But we also cover movies, TV shows, hits and tunes. It's your weekly bowl of hockey and nonsense. Puck Soup.